It's nice to say that children can be dismissed for children's church. Winter casts a cold shadow. The days are short. The nights are long. The sun seems shy, hidden behind the grayness. Warmth has packed up their bags and migrated to the tropics. Beach weather would be nice, but that's not going to happen here. It's winter. Spring will see blossoms, and summer sways with leafy bushes in the wind, and autumn brings forth a fresh harvest of glory. But winter is still, deathly still. Fields are frosty, and trees extend skeletal limbs. Wildlife is silent, gone. Winter brings danger, blizzards, ice storms. Caution is the theme. Come springtime, you can run barefoot in the meadow and dive into a pond. But now it's time to button up and zip up and stay in, stay safe. It's winter out there. Is it winter where you are? Asks Max Lucado in his latest book, You Were Made for This Moment. Are you trapped in a perpetual gloom? Do you know the solstice of sunless days and barren trees? I know a mom who does. A mom of three kids, two in diapers and one with a disability. Her apartment is small. Her income is meager. Her husband is AWOL. Life at Camp Chaos was too much for him. It's too much for her as well. But what choice does she have? Someone always needs to be fed and changed and held or bathed. So she does whatever needs doing, and it appears she'll be doing it forever. And she wonders if winter will ever pass. So does my friend Ed. Max says he and I have much in common. Our health is good. Our golf game is poor. We both like dogs. We both have marriages that predate the Carter administration. The difference? My wife asked me what I'd like for dinner. His keeps asking him who he is. He placed her in a memory care facility a year ago, and they dreamed of touring the country in an RV. And so far, he has spent his retirement sleeping alone and making daily visits to a woman who just stares out the window. Winter. Max's new book was born in winter. I quote, as I pen these words, every person on the planet is living in the frost nip of COVID-19. A pandemic has locked us down. My brother Roger is in an assisted living place and is closed in his room and stays there. That mom I told you about, her income is meager because her restaurant job was discontinued. Ed can still see his wife, but only through a window. Many church doors are closed and students are stuck at home and masks hide smiles. A microscopic virus has paralyzed us. The entire world seems wrapped in winter. We're all searching for springtime. But winter's a part of our lives. Some personal, some global, but all are powerful. And try as we might to bundle up and lean into the wind, the hardiest among us fall. The wind's too strong. Nights are too long. Questions all too common. Will this winter ever pass? You wonder, don't you wonder if we'll survive this? If so, God has a six-letter word of encouragement for you. ESTHER. The book that bears her name was written to be read in wintertime, written for the emotionally weary, written for the person who feels outnumbered by foes and outmaneuvered by fate, outdone by fear. It's as if God, in all his kind providence, heard all the prayers of all the souls who have ever been stuck in an Arctic January, and to every person who longed to see a green spring on a barren branch, he says, follow me. I want you to see what I can do. He escorts us to the front row of a grand theater, invites us to take a seat. He nods at the symphony conductor. The baton is lifted. The music begins. The curtain opens. And we are eyewitnesses to a triumph of divine drama. What a great introduction to our study of the book of Esther over the next few weeks. Vine's expository Bible notes, Esther reads like a good novel. It has governmental intrigue, romance, and justice. It has a rag-to-riches subplot and strong female characters. Something for everyone is here. And it's a welcome bit of page-turning narrative after reading the history of the Israel in the first half of the Old Testament. Here's a story that ends the way we want it to, with the good guys ahead and the bad guys getting what they deserve. God wins. The writer of Esther is unknown. Scholars believe that the writer was a Jew, again, living in Persia, somewhat familiar with Persian culture and the royal palace, who was anxious to communicate God's miraculous saving of the Jews. J. Vernon McGee and others suggest it could be Mordecai himself, based on chapter 9, verse 27. The setting is the city of Susa in the 5th century BC Persia, modern-day Iran. The empire in its day was what Rome was to the first century. And during the reign of Darius the First, better known as Darius the Great, 522 to 486 BC, it controlled more than 2.9 million square miles. The empire consisted of roughly 44% of the entire world's population, an estimated 50 million people. It stretched 4,464 miles from what is now Punjab, India, to Khartoum, Sudan. To get a scope of it, walk from Los Angeles all the way to Atlanta, turn around and walk all the way back again. Or if you prefer, simply duplicate the United States map, set the two copies side by side, and you get a feel for the breadth of the Persian Empire. The story of Esther has five main characters. Xerxes the king, who has a thirst for wine and disregard for women, and he rules from 486 to 465 BC. His name in Hebrew is Ahasuerus. It all sounds like a good sneeze, Ahasuerus. He had a bit of a temper and can't seem to make decisions for himself. Next is a queen who refuses to obey the king and so loses her crown. And her name is Vashti. We have, of course, a villain, Haman. Kind of sounds like hangman, which is convenient because his tyrant seeks the Jews' destruction. Mordecai is a leader among the Jews, the wise elder in this story. And finally comes Esther, the beautiful and courageous heroine of the book. The spiritual lesson of Esther is that God preserves and protects his people. The Jews are facing annihilation due to Haman's scheme, but through the quick thinking of Mordecai and the courage of Esther, God providentially saves them from destruction. Spoiler alert, in the end, the reader is delighted at the irony and poetic justice of Haman hanging on the gallows as he had constructed for Mordecai, and Mordecai being honored as in the way that Haman himself had planned for himself. You got to love the story. We read Mordecai had a cousin whom he brought up because she was an orphan, and she really must have been a head turner, Esther. Esther 2:7 reads, Esther had a lovely figure and was beautiful. According to Karen Jobes in the NIV application commentary, she writes, the ancient rabbinical writings position her as one of the four most beautiful women in the world, along with Sarah and Rahab and Abigail. She gained access to the king because of her appearance, but her story has relevance to you because of her conviction and her courage. Are you getting some sense of the elements of this drama? We've got a clueless brute of a king. We've got a devious, heartless, bloodthirsty Haman. We've got a nation of Jews under the threat of extermination. We've got Mordecai, who's defiant and dedicated and determined. And Esther, who's not only gorgeous, but gutsy. And God? Where's God in this story? Now, there's a question for the asking. The book of Esther is known for being one of the two books in the Bible that never mentions the name of God, the other being Song of Songs. Until this point, God has been everywhere, seemingly on every page, in Eden as the creator, in Ur as the prompter, in Egypt as the liberator, in the promised land as the warrior. But in Persia, the trail seems to have gone cold. At no point do we read God said, or God chose, or God decreed. There's no mention of the temple, or the name Yahweh, or Elohim, the Hebrew names meaning God. There's no mention of apocalyptic visions, as Daniel saw, or concern for God's law, as Ezra expressed, and prayers is implied, but it's not described. The seas don't split, and the heavens don't roar, and no dry bones come to life. Warren Wiersbe, this much is true. Though God is not named in this book, he is present and active. He was not hiding, he was only hidden. The book of Esther is one of the greatest illustrations in the Bible of the principle of Romans 8:28. For we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose for them. God faithfully works. Daniel 4:35, he does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? This means we can trust him without fear. We can obey him without hesitation. For the kingdom is the Lord's. He rules over the nations. Psalm 22, verse 28. The book also reminds us that God was caring for his people Israel and fulfilling his purpose to Abraham and his promise there, as we read in Genesis 12. Every enemy that has ever tried to exterminate the Jewish nation has been defeated. Mordecai came closest to identifying God's work behind the scenes in history on behalf of his chosen. When he tells Esther, for if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. That's a key verse, Esther 4:14. God has made an everlasting covenant with his people, and he will keep his part of the agreement. But why? Why the absence or seeming absence of spirituality? Why the seeming silence of God? Max answers, if you are in the midst of winter, you can relate to these questions. God may seem hidden from you, distant perhaps, removed, absent from your script. The world feels cut loose from the sun. Others hear from God, you don't. Others say they know the will of God, but you're bewildered. Is he there? Does he care? You're unsure. Might you be open to a gold nugget that is in the substratum of the book of Esther? Quiet providence. Providence, that $2 theological term that used to describe God's continuous control over history. I heard it a lot at First Presbyterian. God not only spoke the universe into being, but he governs it by his authority. He is sustaining all things by his powerful word, Hebrews 1:3. He is regal, royal, and this is essential. He is right here. It's God Emmanuel, God with us. I've always enjoyed J. Vernon McGee. I don't know if you used to hear him in his Through the Bible series. But he writes, providence means that the hand of God is in the glove of human events. When God's not at the steering wheel, he's the backseat driver. He is the coach who calls the signals from the bench. Providence is the unseen rudder on the ship of state. God is the pilot at the wheel during the night watch. As someone said, he makes great doors swing on little hinges. God brought together a little baby's cry and a woman's heart down by the River Nile when Pharaoh's daughter went there to bathe. The Lord pinched little Moses and he let out a cry. And the cry reached the heart of the princess, and God used it to change the destiny of the people. That was providence. That was the hand of God. He's been known to intervene dramatically. We see it all through Bible. By his hand, the Red Sea opened, the manna fell from heaven, a virgin gave birth, a tomb gave life. Yet for every divine shout, there are a million whispers. The book of Esther relates the story of a whispering God who is unseen and in inscrutable ways superintends all the actions and circumstances for the good of his people. This priceless book reminds us that he need not be loud to be strong. He need not cast a shadow to be present. God is still eloquent in his seeming silence and still active, even when he appears more distant. So the book of Esther deserves our attention. So let's ourselves get caught up in the drama. Act one, confusion. God's people chose the glamour of Persia over the goodness of God. Compromise replaces conviction. Confusion replaces clarity. And then act two, crisis. A decree of death places all Jews on life support. What hope does a fringe minority have in a pagan society? Act three, conquest. The unimaginable happens, something so unexpected that sorrow turned to joy, and their mourning somersaulted into a holiday for parties and fun and laughter, is the way it's rendered in Esther 9:22 in the Message. The theme of the book of Esther well, indeed, the theme of the whole Bible is that in all the injustices of the world will be turned on their head. Grand reversals are God's trademark. When we feel as though everything's falling apart, God is working in our midst, causing everything to fall into place. He is the King of quiet providence. And he invites you and me to partner with him in his kingdom work. The headline of the book of Esther reads, "Relief will come." Will you be a part of it? When all seems lost, it's not. When evil seems to own the day, God still has the final say. He has a Joseph for every famine. He has a David for every Goliath. When his people need rescuing, God calls a Rahab into service. When a baby Moses needs a mama, God prompts an Egyptian princess to have compassion. He always has his person. He had someone in the story of Esther. And in your story, he has you. You perhaps want to retreat and stay quiet and stay safe and stay backstage. And I don't have what it takes, you tell yourself. And you can easily dismiss the made-for-this-moment ideas as just folly. But I also hope you won't. Relief will come. Will you be a part of it? This world gets messy for sure, but God's solutions come through people of courage, people like Mordecai, like Esther, people like you, people who dare to believe that they, by God's grace, were made to face moments like we face in this coming year. In God's plan, confusion and crisis give way to conquest. Winters don't last forever. The trees will bud. The snow will melt. Springtime is only a turn of the calendar away. For all we know, God's hand is about to turn the page. So believe it. Selah.